which is the case of Coleman versus Commonwealth. Mr. Snook, good morning to you.
Good morning,
Mr. Jeffrey. Mr. Snook, whenever you are ready to begin, and I will ask you if you would like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
About 4 minutes, please.
Yes, sir.
So may it please the court, Ashby Coleman was 19 years old when he was first investigated because two images, unlike your earlier case, not 2,000, but two images had been posted to an Instagram account, his Instagram account. He was asked about one of them, admitted to having uploaded it. He was never asked about number two. Even at trial when he testified, the officer said he couldn't remember whether he had actually asked Mr. Coleman about the second one. The judge actually misremembered it in dealing with the motion to strike. Mr. Coleman was sentenced.
Well, the investigator testified he believes that he asked him, but he did not remember.
Yeah.
And as I recall, your client did not deny posting it, said he did not recall posting that one.
Right.
Is that also correct?
I think that's correct.
But he admitted that it was his account, that it was password protected, and he also had given testimony that, or had admitted in his statement to the investigator that he did not know of anyone posting images to his account without his knowledge or consent.
And that's true, and he also said that it had been received. I think he was asked about the one image, only about the first image. He was not actually asked anything at trial about the second image. At trial, he was asked about the first image and said that he had that had come with a bunch of adult porn that he had downloaded, which sort of sets up our eventual argument on the knowingly issue, which, of course, is a jury instruction problem. My primary argument today, I want to touch on a couple of points. The first, we argue at some length in the brief, and I'll go into it if the court wishes me to, that these images don't constitute pornography because they don't meet the standard either of lasciviousness or of proof to the juvenile.
Isn't that a jury question, though?
Well, it is, and that gets to the second question, which is the issue of what is the level of review either by a judge as a matter of law in the trial court or this court on appellate review. The U.S. Supreme Court has said in Jenkins versus Georgia and New York versus Ferber, a number of other cases, has talked about there being an independent review of the legal judgment, basically, of something like this that's an arguable First Amendment question. In fact, I ran across a brief just last night to the U.S. Supreme Court that listed 19 states that require independent appellate review of the determination that we're talking about here, 5 states that have a more deferential standard to the jury verdict. So 19 states deal with it as an independent review by this court, not deferring specifically to the jury verdict, and I would argue that that's in fact required by Ferber and by Jenkins. So that's one of the important points I think that this court needs to.
When you say required, do you have any precedent that binds us?
There is no precedent that I'm aware of by a Virginia appellate court.
So you're suggesting it's being persuasive for us, not required by
us.
Well,
I would suggest to the court that Jenkins versus Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court, New York versus Ferber, the U.S. Supreme Court, are binding. I will also admit
I agree with that, but that does not set the standard that we have to conduct an independent review.
Those cases talk about an independent review, meaning not merely deferential to the trial court. In candor, Jenkins is a case dealing with adult obscenity rather than specifically child pornography. In New York versus Ferber, it's child pornography, but again, in candor, it's not a directly controlling decision.
Well, it seems to me that the landscape as far as the United States Supreme Court is concerned is, and we unfortunately use these terms interchangeably, but obscenity is not protected by any part of the First Amendment. Whether something is obscene or not is a question of law, largely. Pornography is not protected by the First Amendment, and the Supreme Court actually said as much in Miller. And so when you have indecent photographs or images of one sort or another. And by the way, child pornography clearly is not protected by the First Amendment. You don't have a constitutional right to, you know, publish kiddie porn anywhere, as far as I know. So whether and to what extent a state chooses to regulate possession or publication or whatever of child pornography, there's no First Amendment protection there unless it is not obscene. Okay. Well, in fact, with child pornography, I don't think there's any protection at all, quite honestly. So, and in determining, you know, what constitutes child pornography, there's obviously questions of fact involved. And those questions of fact are solely for a jury. It's not for a court to second-guess that unless, as a matter of law, it could never be. It could never meet the standard. And that's a pretty high bar to get over. And, of course, the way you deal with that typically is in a motion to strike or in a post-trial motion to set aside. And I think most trial courts, when you're dealing with issues like this where there's so much fact-finding involved and you've got a jury sitting in the box, you're going to defer the legal question until after they reach a verdict because you may never have to reach it. Why is that an unreasonable approach?
Well, in this case, that's in essence what happened. There was a jury verdict. We filed a post-trial motion.
But your argument was it should have been determined ahead of time, as I understood your argument.
Well, and also that the judge should overrule, should basically find that it wasn't lewd, lascivious, and the other statutory criteria. So we were asking Judge Cook, even after the fact, to say these don't qualify. And the judge said it's a jury determination. I'm not messing with the jury. So we have never had, even though we asked in post-trial motions, we have never had a judge express an independent assessment of whether these constitute child pornography or not. And we argue that it is incumbent on a judge to do so, first of all, for the trial judge to do so, and second of all, for the appellate court not simply to defer to the...
I'm not understanding your argument because it sounds like what you're saying is the trial court should substitute its judgment for the fact finder, determine, for example, whether something is lewd or lascivious, you know, is a factual determination, unless you can say as a matter of law it could never be. You know, no reasonable person would ever reach this conclusion. I understood your at least some of your assignments there to be that the trial court should have made a pretrial determination of that. I don't see how any court could ever make a pretrial determination of something like lewdness. Now, once they've heard the evidence and once the evidence the case goes to the jury and you see what the jury did and then see what the Commonwealth presented, you might be able after the fact to say no reasonable fact finder could have come to the conclusion based on the evidence that was presented. But I don't see how you pre-screen or there's any authority, I think this is what Judge Atlee was alluding to, how there's any authority to pre-screen this stuff by a trial court.
Well, Judge, again, I filed a post-trial motion asking the judge in the post-trial proceedings to declare them to be not lewd and lascivious.
And the trial court denied it.
And the trial court denied it.
The jury found that it was.
And my point is that I believe that the authorities of the U.S. Supreme Court and, again, the other various, in the 19 other states, as advisory to this court, suggest very strongly that it is up to an appellate court to conduct an independent appellate review as to whether these items are constitutionally protected or are not constitutionally protected. So that's, we ask that it be done in a post-trial motion, and I think that that's the appropriate time to have done so. I think we've raised the issue appropriately. One of the other points I wanted to address, and I mentioned this a couple different times, in the brief, is that a lot of the argument of the Attorney General's office in this case quotes the argument of the Commonwealth's attorney as though it were evidence. It is not, of course. There is basically no evidence other than the photographs themselves. And then one last point that I wanted to make is to touch a little bit on this issue of a jury instruction. We acknowledge that nobody asked for a jury instruction that dealt with the issue of whether the possession or whether the distribution was knowing and whether there was whether the images were known to be pornographic or child pornography. We submitted, again, recognizing that puts us kind of behind the eight ball procedurally, we have a couple of tests we have to meet. One of them is a clear error. We believe that under the Excitement Video case, and the U.S. Supreme Court decisions over the last 24 years, that it clearly is and was. Second was it substantial? And as I argued in the brief, we would have liked to have been able to make the argument which the jury instructions as given did not permit, that I didn't know that this picture was of a child. The argument is that the instruction as given was essentially a strict liability instruction, and that's I would argue certainly number one that's not the way the statute reads at the moment. There was no assessment.
Well, the statute was certainly amended, but the statute in effect at the time of the offense is what controlled.
Right, and I think it's important. Two points important. Number one, that even at that time, it should have been clear that an interpretation like that would be unconstitutional. Number two, that the remedy, therefore, and the way to save the statute and to save the prosecution from unconstitutionality is to read an intent requirement into it. And the Supreme Court of the United States has done that many times. Most recently, the one that I was quoting.
But there was a lascivious intent part of the instructions. I mean, there is a specific lascivious intent is required to be proven, and that was the jury was instructed on that point, weren't they?
Right. But the issue of whether it's a defense to say I didn't know this picture was of somebody under the age of 18, for example, that's a knowing aspect that we believe a proper instruction would have permitted the defense. Mr. Coleman testified in court, I thought this was an image of an adult. I had downloaded images of adults. It was with images of adults. One of the other images had the word barely legal on it, which would imply 18 or over. And so what we have is a situation where the jury was not given an opportunity to consider the possibility that his intent was that he didn't knowingly violate the statute. I see that my time for the moment is up. I'll reserve the balance. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Donald Jeffrey on behalf of the Commonwealth. Some of the questions that were asked, I think, really hit on our argument. And to correct one misimpression, I understand that the proffer of the Commonwealth is what the pictures show is not actually evidence in the case. What I would submit to you, having actually seen the images, is that I think that it's a fairly accurate description of what the pictures show. And if that...
Well, pictures are exhibits, so
we've got the record. You can agree with me or disagree with the prosecutor and me on that point, but I think...
Well, let me stop you right there, Mr. Jeffrey. We're not fact finders, obviously. The jury saw the exhibits, and the statute clearly permits a determination of whether the subject is underage or not to be made by viewing the individuals. Now, we have two exhibits. And in the abstract, one might argue that it may be difficult to tell the difference between an 18-year-old girl and a 17-year-old girl. It's not so difficult to tell the difference between an 18-year-old girl and a 6-year-old girl. The point is that, you know, given the way the statute is worded, we don't review the evidence and make an independent determination of whether or not, what the age of the child is. We simply look at it to determine whether it's reasonable for a jury to conclude that the person or people, in the case of one exhibit depicted in the photographs, are underage, correct?
That's correct. It's essentially, it's a no reasonable fact finder test. To put it another way, is this something that created a question that could have been submitted to a jury? And I would submit to you, with respect to both age and lewdness, that you have those issues here. And in fact, you know, Mr. Snook did a good job on his reply brief, pages 2 and 3, of describing Exhibit 2 and trying to poke holes on why that wasn't a focus on genitalia. And I would submit to you, okay, if you take that at face value, though, it certainly, even by his rendition of that, creates a factual question for a jury. It does not tell you, as a matter of law, you have to take this away from the jury. That's... as I said, I think it was a good argument. It would have been a great argument at trial, but it's to me screams out that there was a factual question for the jury on that point. You're absolutely right, and I guess the court got my letter in terms of the mistake that I made in terms of when objections were.
So we appreciate your candor, by the way.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I missed that. And as I stand here now, I can't tell you if I just forgot to put another argument in or I just missed reading it, but either way, it was an error. The constitutional issue in terms of burden shifting, and that is, in fact, a constitutional issue.
But there's no constitutional protection for child pornography, is there?
There is not, but you know, one of the points was made, there were a body of burden shifting cases cited. This is probably much ado about nothing, because if you look at that statute, it's permissive inference, so there's no merit to the claim that there was unconstitutional burden shifting in any event. That's the argument that I've
Well, the Miller test for obscenity involves looking at in the totality whether allegedly obscene materials have any redeeming social, cultural or whatever educational value based on prevailing community standards. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's pretty
Sounds
close.
Sounds about right.
But if it's child pornography, we don't need to worry about Miller because there's no protection whatsoever for child pornography, as far as I understand the law.
That's
so
absolutely true.
Once a fact finder determines the subject is a child, do we even need to care about any constitutional issues?
I think only to the extent it would affect the way the fact finder approaches it. And again, I'll just come back full circle that's statutory provision about being able to rely on the parents is presumptively constitutional, and it's not a burden-shifting mechanism. So I think if there were some sort of burden-shifting problem there and the jury had it in that context, there may be some legal issue. There's just not here. That statute is presumptively constitutional. As I pointed out on brief, it's been repeatedly found in various states that
would we have to conclude as a matter of law to resolve the main issue here, that no reasonable fact finder could possibly conclude that the subjects depicted are underage?
Underage and lewdness is the other issue. That's
other,
correct.
Yeah.
It's a no reasonable fact finder test. And I would submit to you, if you look at, and in fact, this court sometimes cites Jackson in the sufficiency context, the U.S. Supreme Court case. I mean, insufficiency of evidence is, in fact, itself a constitutional issue, and the constitutional standard is no reasonable fact finder, just like we state with respect to our constitutional claims. And I think in footnote 15, I talked about in another context how really our sufficiency sort of overlaps with constitutional protections as well. So that's absolutely the test. I would submit to you for a number of reasons that I cited on brief with respect to both age and lewdness that you have adequate evidence with respect to create a jury question. With respect to the second exhibit specifically, well, I guess this really goes to all of them. And some of what I'm going to say goes to all of the questions. I think that even if it, well, I guess what I'm going to say is this isn't an appearance-only case, as I pointed out on brief. There are a number of things, and again, Mr. Snook correctly pointed out that, you know, for example, you know, Gallitzin may have been tied both to young adult and teenage pornography, but that is a fact among many, and you know, this court has repeatedly said you don't view the factors in isolation, you view them in the totality. I really like the term the U.S. Supreme Court uses in Arvizu for Fourth Amendment cases in this context. They call it a divide and conquer approach. But I think if you take every one of these factors standing together along with the appearance, based on appearance and appearance plus, you've got sufficient evidence here. Could you quarrel with any one of these factors? You know, in terms of Gallitzin is also tied to young adults? Sure. There were the searches for the admitted searches for kiddie porn, dropping the bar lower than 16 or 17. I cited to you all the places here. These are, and again, the defendant said he didn't think he ever got any, and so on and so forth. But that's a factual question. So you do really have more than appearance here. But yes, if you can look at it under your case law, even if it were an appearance-only case, and I'm referring mostly to Jewell and Stith, if you could find that a reasonable fact finder could make that determination, you affirm the judgment below. But I would certainly submit, for reasons I've stated on brief, that there are other factors here. This isn't just an appearance plus case. I would also point out that, you know, with respect to the jury instruction, constitutional claims can be defaulted. There was no request for this below. And I cited to you the jury instruction case law on this on brief. I'm not going to reiterate that for you, but I would submit to you that there was not, there's not a clear manifest miscarriage of justice. At most, you could say that there might have been one, and I'm going to rely, among other things, on the defendants admitted searches for child pornography and dropping the bar for searches lower than 16 or 17. At most, you could say it might have been a miscarriage, and that's your standard on miscarriage of justice. You know, I refer to that reference in the excitement video to being dicta. It's fairly strong dicta, but the fact of the matter is the U.S. Supreme Court has not decided that issue yet. I talked a little bit about the Ruggiero case on brief in one of the federal circuits. That issue has not been squarely decided. That it was ultimately decided on a statutory construction issue. So although the U.S. Supreme Court has some language that certainly is very troubling in that regard, it has not yet decided the constitutional issue about the requirement for knowing in a statute. The only other thing I think that I would say is with respect to whether he actually posted Commonwealth's Exhibit 2, I would submit, as I argued on brief, that the motion to strike was not renewed after the Commonwealth's case in chief, so under Murillo Rodriguez, that issue is not even properly before you. And in any event, for the reasons I stated on brief, it's without merit. The judgment of the trial court in that regard was not plainly wrong without supporting evidence. Unless the court has further questions, I'll rely on my brief for the remainder of my argument. And I should confirm the judgment.
No question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick points. I wanted to note that one of the prerequisites to giving deference to a jury verdict is that the jury had been properly instructed. We would argue the jury was not properly instructed here, certainly without an instruction that dealt with the issue of knowingly. And as a result, it became essentially a strict liability crime, which it's not supposed to be, even under the version of the statute as it was.
Did you want to respond to the default argument?
As to the
jury instruction?
Oh, clearly it was defaulted. And so the issue becomes, has he been convicted of something that, the issue on the ends of justice, I've always kind of said that the ends of justice exception applies to situations where it couldn't possibly be a crime. There may be other circumstances. I don't know what other circumstances you know your jurisprudence in that respect better than I. But I would submit to the court this is an instance where there is clearly an issue that was raised by the facts that there should have been a proper instruction on. The U.S. Supreme Court last year, I keep coming back to McFadden and the U.S. Supreme Court because it was my case and I know about it. In that case, they dealt with specifically the question of remand, and the Fourth Circuit dealt with the issue where the intent issue was being read into the statute to avoid a constitutional problem. And what Judge Keenan did at that point and on the remand was to say, well, on certain issues, certain of these cases, there is a reason to believe that there was a proper jury issue and it ought to go back, and others there wasn't, and so some were affirmed, some were not. I understand, obviously, we're dealing with a default situation, and I understand it puts us in a bad spot, but I also understand that the basic rule here is still that we've got a guy who had a valid defense that he wasn't permitted to present to the jury. I did want to do one other thing, though, and that is to get back to the question of the relevant standard. There are actually a number of U.S. Supreme Court cases that hold very specifically, and I'll quote now from Bose Corporation versus Consumers Union in the U.S., 466 U.S. 485, that when a jury finds that a defendant's speech falls within an exception to the First Amendment protection, appellate courts, quote, must make an independent examination of the whole record so as to assure themselves that the judgment does not constitute a forbidden intrusion on the field of free expression. The same issue, and that's quoting actually Sullivan in New York Times versus Sullivan. The court also noted that same principle applies to fighting words, incitement, and child pornography. Then to quote from Jenkins versus Georgia, even though questions of appeal to the prurient interest or of patent defensiveness are essentially questions of fact, it would be a serious misreading of Miller to conclude the juries have unbridled discretion in resolving whether the evidence satisfies these standards. And finally, citing Miller itself, First Amendment values are adequately protected by the ultimate power of appellate courts to conduct an independent review of constitutional claims when necessary. So we believe that there is substantial authority for this court to conduct an independent review. We believe the Constitution requires it. We ask the court to do so.
Mr. Snook, one, and I know time has elapsed, but I have one question for you. Hopefully it's just one. Do you concede that when it comes to Exhibit 2, the pictures of the three girls, that it was an issue for the fact finder as to whether or not any one or all three of them were underage, or do you contend that it, as a matter of law, the trial court should have found that no reasonable fact finder could determine that one or all of them are underage?
I the latter, Your Honor. I contend that it is up to the appellate court and up to the trial court, reviewing at the close of the case. It's up to those courts to make a legal determination whether or not, and without simply deferring to the jury standard.
Yeah, but my question was, do you concede that that is an issue of fact as to whether or not they were underage, or was that solely a question of law because no reasonable fact finder could have found that they were underage?
I concede that it is an issue of fact. It is also an issue of fact which the U.S. Supreme Court says requires an independent review.
Thank you. All right, we will come down and greet counsel, and the court will be in recess.